Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. Here is Corey Hawley in this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 17, Number 6. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was Sports Performance Anxiety, Part 2. In Part 1 of this topic, I discussed preparation and warm-up as techniques to help prevent or relieve sports performance anxiety. In Part 2, I covered 10 more strategies for a total of 12, including expectations, self-doubt, image, breathing, meditation, humor, visualization, music, grounding, and physical movement. The one that helps me the best when I get performance anxiety, sometimes it really affects me when I throw the hammer, when I get out there in the circle by myself and everyone's watching me, is what my coach told me. Just look at everybody and think of them as being naked. And then you sort of break out into a kind of inner laugh. Also, I joke around with the officials and the other mates, and that loosens some of the anxiety. And then plus, I've learned to not overthink. So when I go in the circle in a competition, I just say to myself, okay, Corey, just throw the damn thing. Don't think about how you're going to throw it. Just throw it. And then trusting in the work I've done. Like, I work hard. I practice a lot. I show up. I do the work. And I pride myself in that. So I'm going to draw from that confidence into the circle. And then another component that I've learned is I don't focus on the outcome. I'm going to do my best to throw it as good as I can, and I'm not going to worry about how far I throw it or who I beat or getting a new record. That expectation can create anxiety as well. So a lot of these techniques are very useful and very helpful if you have performance anxiety. And this is not just in sport, of course. This could be in public speaking or in playing music. Like, I know a friend who loves playing the guitar and singing, but she is absolutely terrified of getting up in front of somebody. And so that's going to affect her ability to do what she loves. So this is something that we have to work on and overcome. In essence, to overcome sports performance anxiety, the athlete must come to terms with all of their personal, self-imagined, and self-generated fears. That's right. These are self-imagined. It's in your head. Challenge the rationality of these fears, isolate and analyze them, learn how to embrace competition pressure, and finally, trust in the skills they have worked so hard to create in practice. That's the one I mentioned that I do myself. If this is done, it will then be possible for the athlete to perform as well in competition or even better than during practice. So that's my goal. When I go into competition, I want to perform as well as I do in practice. Someone once told me that they were the warm-up champion or the practice champion. So they have these great throws in practice or when they're warming up for the competition. But when it comes to actually being in the competition, when you've got to produce the outcome that's pressured on you to produce, they choke. So if you do choke, there's a way out of it. And it's all about coming to terms with why you are afraid and what it is you're afraid of. Now, on this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is science. What is it? Science is the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. The English word science comes from the Latin scientia, which means knowledge. It was philosopher William Whewell who first coined the term scientist. Prior to that, scientists were called natural philosophers. So originally, philosophers were scientists, at least many of them were. Science is not something you can hold in your hand. It's a verb, not a noun. Science is a concept of the human mind. You will not find it under any rock or hiding on a distant planet. It's a way of thinking. It's a construct of human thought because no other animals think scientifically. Okay, only humans can do this. And unfortunately, most humans don't. Science is based on fact, not opinion or preferences. The process of science is designed to challenge ideas through research. One important aspect of the scientific process is that it focuses only on the natural world, not on the hairy, fairy, mystical stuff or the supernatural. Anything that is considered supernatural does not fit into the definition of science. So you can't really take someone on who's trying to defend a position that is so-called non-scientific with a scientific approach. There's no way to falsify their position. There's no substance to their position. So really, it's kind of a no-win situation. You go back at each other and argue, but at the end of the day, a person will believe what they believe, regardless of whether they have evidence or not, and so will you. When conducting research, scientists rely on the scientific method. Now, this is what I teach in the course, the CSNA. Using the scientific method, and based on the scientific method, we know that a good quality whole food diet reinforced with supplements and movement is the best way and best approach to get well. But they rely on the scientific method to collect measurable empirical evidence in an experiment related to a hypothesis. These are important terminologies: scientific method, evidence, experiment, hypothesis, support, theory. Okay, now once you come up with a hypothesis, then you have to evaluate the data, and then the results help support or contradict the theory that you have. So the steps of the scientific method go something like this. Number one, make an observation. Two, ask questions about the observation and gather information. Three, form a hypothesis, a tentative description of what's been observed, and then make predictions based on that hypothesis. Four, test the hypothesis and predictions in an experiment that can be reproduced. It's got to be reproducible. Five, analyze the data and draw conclusions. Accept or reject the hypothesis or modify the hypothesis if necessary. Six, reproduce the experiment until there are no discrepancies between observations and theory. If you can't reproduce it, there is no science. The qualities that transform a good idea into good science can be captured into four maxims. One, good science responds to real phenomena or real problems. Good scientific problems are those that reflect real phenomena in the world or real problems that need to be solved. Tangible, real stuff. Two, good science is in the details. A scientific solution to a problem takes the form of a working model that produces observable behavior or empirical data that can be compared and contrasted to the real phenomenon. Three, good science makes a difference. The measure of the contribution of a piece of work is in how it solves real problems or shapes the work of others. This is what science is great at. It helps us to solve problems. It's really a search for truth, knowing what to do and how to do it best, the most efficient way. That's what science can help us do in our real life. It's not just in the engineering world or in physics. It's real life, every day. What is the best approach to take? Use a scientific method in your mind. Science is a human endeavor. Scientists, of course, are all human, with the typical faults and foibles that non-scientists have. So that explains how science can be corrupted or fudged or modified for gain, for profit, for glory, for power. Sociology, politics, psychology, and similar aspects of human nature all have a profound influence on how science is conducted. Scientists are no less or more corruptible than anyone else. And that was something that kind of shocked me originally back in the day when I began to really put my nose to the grindstone and study science. And I just thought that how could anyone in this field violate the very essence of what the field is all about? But it happens all the time. And that's where you need to watch Zeitgeist. If you watch the trilogy Zeitgeist by Peter Joseph, you'll realize how obvious it is and will become why people play around with science and cheat to validate a false response. Four, good solid science follows certain rules and guidelines. These are important, like playing sport. There's rules and there's guidelines. Exactly what these rules and guidelines are depends on what area of science a specific scientific procedure falls within. Fact, in a scientific context, is a generally accepted reality. Opinions are neither fact nor theory. They are not officially the domain of science. So everyone's entitled to an opinion, and everyone's got one like their rear end, but opinions don't amount to much, and there's different kinds of opinions. So science cannot directly address such issues as whether God exists or whether people are good or bad. Science generally uses the formulation of falsifiable hypotheses developed via systematic empiricism. Hypotheses that cannot ever be disproven are not real science. So if you come up with a concept and it's impossible to invalidate, then it is no more true or false than anything anyone else can come up about anything else. To really get a grip on reality, we have to follow these rules. Acceptance of scientific ideas is based on a process of publication and peer review. To become a legitimate theory, a hypothesis must be subjected to the approval of a scientist's peers and published in an accredited scientific journal. Okay, some examples of theories which are fact. The atomic theory, all of that was originally a theory. It was math on paper. They proved it out. Then you got germ theory. That's another good example. Before, we had the microscopes fine-tuned enough to actually see the little critters, the parasites, the bacteria, the microorganisms. There was a theory. The theory was based on a supposition, based on empirical evidence, based on observation. Somebody figured out that there's got to be something other than demons causing the infections that people were experiencing. And because that person knew that there was no such thing as any demons, it had to be something physical that he couldn't see. So there's lots of theories, and really it's important to understand that a good theory is fact. They're one and the same thing. And a lot of people don't understand what a theory actually is. Now, replication is also vital to good science. For the scientific community to accept a finding, other investigators must be able to duplicate the original investigator's find. So if you say that you see something or saw something and no one else saw it and no one else will ever see it again, it's not likely that you did see it. It's just a figment of your brain because you have no validation, no proof, no evidence. So anyone can say anything about what they experience inside their head or their mind or their imagination or in a dream, and that doesn't make it real. That just makes your experience seem real, and you have to understand the difference between the illusion and what's actually real. Science has a built-in self-correcting mechanism. Any theory held true is always open to improvement and modification with the discovery of new data and information. So as new data comes out, new discovery, it will destroy some of the belief systems. And this is obvious to the history of the world, where the entire planet was engaged in a belief and it was proven wrong. Why? Because of science, because evidence proved it wrong. And that's the key. Evidence in the court of law. Evidence that you need to sanctify your position. That's very important. Now, I talked about opinions, but what are they in fact? An opinion is a belief that may or may not be backed up with evidence, but which cannot be proved without that evidence. It's normally a subjective statement and may be the result of an emotion or an interpretation of facts. People may draw opposing opinions from the same facts. Now, there's also scientific opinions. These are opinions formed via the scientific method. They're absolutely backed by evidence. A scientific opinion representing the formally agreed consensus of a scientific body or establishment often takes the form of a published position paper citing the research, producing the scientific evidence upon which the opinion is based. So I have this opinion and it's based on this scientific evidence. It's not a fact yet because we need to validate my opinion, but I'm using scientific evidence to formulate my idea, my hypothesis, my opinion. And so therefore it is most likely more valid, not necessarily, than a non-scientific opinion. Because a person could have a non-scientific opinion and be right without knowing it and without having any evidence. The process of science is a way of building knowledge about the universe, constructing new ideas that illuminate the world around us. Those ideas are inherently tentative, but as they cycle through the process of science again and again and are tested and retested and tested and retested in different ways, we become increasingly confident in them. So the confidence goes to a point. And once the point has been reached where the data has been shown to be wrong, you can no longer have confidence in it. But as with the theory of evolution, more data, DNA, archaeology, anthropology, fossil records, all of it is just continuously making that theory fact. So if we get more stuff coming in and it keeps proving out the theory, you refine it, you modify it, but you still have this basic rock that's unchanging and continually proves itself out and is able to defeat any of the challenges placed upon it, then it's most likely that it's true. In scientific discourse, uncertainty, this is a big one, does not imply that the science is unreliable. Instead, uncertainty is about probabilities and likelihoods that describe our understanding of a particular outcome. Ultimately, the only scientific certainty that exists is uncertainty itself. And that is the difference between the scientist and the religious fundamentalist. Their belief is unchanging and it's perfect, whereas the scientist says everything's going to change, nothing is perfect, we live in a universe dominated by entropy, everything's going to fall apart, nothing stays the same, everything is in a state of flux, everything is changing, and we know very little compared to what could be known, and the average person knows almost nothing compared to what the entire world's knowledge is. So you always have to be open to change your position when you get more knowledge, and that's why knowledge is power in that context. But uncertainty is not a weakness in science. Rather than eroding our scientific confidence in something like Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection, using probabilities to talk about scientific uncertainties allows scientists to communicate findings more precisely and transparently. Now let's talk about pseudoscience. Pseudoscience consists of statements, beliefs, or practices that are claimed to be both scientific and factual, but are incompatible with the scientific method. Pseudo means false. We know that this is a false science. That's what pseudoscience means. It means false science. A pseudoscience is a belief or process that masquerades as science in an attempt to claim a legitimacy which it would not otherwise be able to achieve on its own terms. It is often known as fringe or alternative science. The most important of its defects is usually the lack of the carefully controlled and thoughtfully interpreted experiments which provide the foundation of the natural sciences and which contribute to their advancement. Now, Aristotle said that a scientist is someone who thinks like one, hence the need to think according to the rules of logic, of which he is the father of. No one needs an academic degree to think like a scientist. A child, if taught correctly, could think like a scientist. But rather, we need to rely on reason, logic, and rationality as a principal means of interpreting reality. So the problem most people have with reality itself is they look at it, it looks like it's designed. That's the illusion as described in detail by biologists and physicists, right? What you see is not what you get. It's not really what's going on. But it looks like it is that way. So we believe with our old way of thinking instead of studying physics and understanding chemistry and biology. As quoted by mathematician and philosopher Bertrand Russell, who's one of my favorites, there can't be a practical reason for believing what isn't true. Either a thing is true or it isn't. If it is true, you should believe it, and if it isn't, you shouldn't, and if you can't find out if it's true or whether it isn't, you should suspend judgment. That's just a great philosophy in life. There are things that are true. They're quite obvious. And there are things that are not true. They're also quite obvious. So rest assured on that. But if you can't determine if something is true or not, don't be compelled to have to make a decision about whether you think it's real or true or not. You don't have to. be comfortable in your not knowing. I think that's part of the key to not experiencing anxiety in this world. Science is based on what our senses can sense, and what technology, as an extension of human sensation, can identify or measure. If there is nothing to sense, nothing to see, feel, touch, hear, smell, weigh, or measure, then what remains is nonsense. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Carl Sagan, American astronomer, cosmologist, astrophysicist, astrobiologist, and author. Science is a way of thinking much more than it is a body of knowledge.